I gave a talk a couple days ago on the title, Is Anything True Anymore? And unfortunately, the first 6 or 7 minutes of the tape are missing. So basically what I'm doing here is I'm redoing the first several minutes of the talk. So what you're going to notice is there's no audience for the first few minutes. It may sound a bit canned. And then at some point, probably about 6 or 7 minutes into talk, we'll switch over to the talk I gave at San Diego State on the 14th of November in front of a live audience of about 70 or so over there at the university. Let's get started. So the title of my talk tonight is, What is Truth? Or, Is Anything True Anymore? Let me talk a little bit about the issue that I want us to think about, because I have a concern. And my concern is what's happening to our cultures. I'm thinking specifically even of the American culture, but really the culture of the world. And there's a few issues that I'm really concerned about. I'm concerned about the secularization of culture. By the way, I don't have a problem with a secular government. In fact, I like a secular government. I'm not really a big fan of prayer in schools, and I don't really want to have a government church, a government-run church. I like separation of church and state. I like freedom of religion. But what I don't like is the fact that in our culture, it's become somehow bad or evil to even express a religious conviction. Or if you have a religious conviction, if it's Buddhism or Hinduism or any other ism, that's fine. But even the slightest intimation of belief in Christianity, belief in Christian values, it's almost like evil. It's like a form of idolatry or kind of like vulgar to even mention religion. It's going to offend people or something like that. And my personal thinking is that I think having a Christian idea out there in the public is a good thing. I just see a loss of morality. I see a people who've lost the sense of what's right and wrong. A sense of a need to do what's right. Moral truth has lost its footing. It's like nobody has a right to say anything is wrong anymore. All right, murder's wrong, but how about sexual morality? How about divorce? How about adultery? How about lying? How about deception? These things are morally wrong. And yet in our culture, we've developed the sense that anybody who takes a moral stand is somehow being judgmental. There's a couple of philosophies I want to talk about tonight. I want to talk about naturalism, and I want to talk about postmodernism. I'll get to those in a bit. But under those philosophies, there's this sense that there is no truth, or anybody who stands for a truth is somehow, by definition, biased or prejudiced or something like that. And I think Christianity and belief in God in general has lost the moral high ground. We've lost the place that I think is needed in our culture, for our culture to be a good culture, for the needs of people to be taken care of, for people to be happy, to have a place that's safe, a place where people have families that lead to mental health and these kind of things. We need a sense of morality. We need a sense of ethics. We need a sense of what's true, what's right, and what's wrong. And I want to challenge the believers here to not give up the moral high ground, to not just say, oh, well, we'll just talk about it at church. I want to see these things talked about at the university. I wanted to see it talked about at our college. So I see the secularization of our culture. I see the loss of morality. I see the loss of God. If you follow the light of naturalism, scientism, scientific materialism, whatever you want to call it, then people are beginning to think that belief in Christianity is kind of up there with belief in the Easter Bunny or the flying spaghetti monster. It's just like superstition. Let me just give an example. This comes from my daughter's life just a few years ago. She's in college now. She's off at UC Santa Barbara, freshman year. But back in high school, there was an assignment in her class, which was to give a speech, and the speech needed to be on some sort of controversial topic. So she chose as her topic, why I believe in God. And her teacher said, no, we can't have any religious discussion in this class. That's against the rules. We can't do it. And she refused to let her do the talk. And my daughter was devastated. She put a lot of time and energy and effort preparing the talk. But the thing is, the teacher talked about religion all the time in class. she'd talk about the Bible and say, Bible, how silly, myths and fables. How could anybody believe that kind of nonsense? So she didn't hesitate to talk about religion, to put it down, to make it look like anybody who believes in God is foolish, an idiot, uneducated, something like that. And so there's this general atmosphere in our culture in general, but especially in the academic situation, where anybody who simply professes a belief in God is treated as if they're an idiot, they're out in left field. That's especially true in my field, in teaching of science. So I really believe that we've lost the intellectual high ground. Those who believe in God have been cowed into silence. It's especially true in science. A survey was done a couple years ago, and they asked trained professional scientists if they believed not only in God, but in a God who actually intervenes when people pray. And it was something like 43% said, yes, they believe in that kind of God. Don't quote me on the exact number, but it was in the 40s somewhere. And I would suggest that if you include those who believe in some sort of God, like a deistic kind of God, who may not actually intervene, not a personal God, then I'm sure the numbers are way over 60%. And yet, when you're in scientific circles, there's this atmosphere that says anybody who believes in God should be quiet about it, they should be embarrassed about it, and they get laughed at. Another story along those lines, this was about 3 or 4 years ago, I was going to a conference in Arizona, and there's 10 of us science professors all in a van. You can imagine what we were talking about, a bunch of nerdy topics. But then as we were talking, one of the professors said, you know, Christianity, I don't know how anybody can believe in that nonsense. It's just only totally uneducated people. I mean, just to give you an example, I learned that in the Old Testament, if anybody wore a garment made out of two different materials, capital punishment. What kind of religion is that? How can anybody believe this nonsense? I just can't believe we have ignorant people who still believe in Christianity. Anyway, I stopped and I said, oh, actually, excuse me, I've read the Bible and it doesn't say that. And she said, oh, yes, it does. I mean, I saw it at a website. And I go, oh, there you go. I found it at a website. And I said, actually, you know what? I've read the Bible, the entire Bible, through 5, 6 times at least. And I'm telling you, that is not in the Bible. In fact, people say there's all these scientific errors in the Bible. I've never found a single scientific error anywhere in the Bible. Then what I did was, I pulled out my Bible. So here, it got really quiet in there, all these science professors, and this guy pulls out his Bible. And I turned to the passage in Leviticus that she was talking about. And I just read it. And by the way, it does not say anything about capital punishment. It does say that people shouldn't wear clothing with two different materials. And by the way, there's a spiritual application of that. God is talking about not becoming involved in worldly affairs. And it was symbolic. And the rabbis have a great interpretation of that. And I think Christians have a good interpretation of that as well. But it's symbolic of what we have here, which is in intellectual circles, believers are treated as if they're sort of, you know, like little pets. You know, well, you know, Johnny, he's you know, he's got a little problem. He's just not that, he's not with it or something like that. And I strongly protest. What I want to do is I want to compare some other worldviews to the Christian worldview and show that what I believe, which is that the Christian worldview is by far the best worldview that we have at our disposal. Jesus came and he said, I came to testify to the truth. And Pilate said in response, what is truth? You know, that's a good question. What is truth? Because if you buy the postmodernist idea, you say there is no such thing as truth. Nothing is true. I mean, look, I'll take this book right here. What's going to happen if I let go of this book? I believe if I let go of this book, it's going to fall. I believe it is truth. It is truth. It is true that all things with mass are attracted to one another by this force we call gravity. And you could deny it. You could say, well, that's culture. Our culture doesn't accept that truth. But I say, that's absolute truth. So Pilate asked a good question. It's a question I want us to think about tonight. What is truth? What is the nature of truth? Now, in order to do this, I want to talk a little bit about worldview. Before I do that, I want us to read a quote. It's by a guy named Dallas McCown. Now, Dallas McCown is a very well-known evolutionist, one of the leading evolutionists of our day. And in discussing the whole issue of the intellectual place of Christianity, let's read a quote which I believe represents kind of the typical attitude of the intellectual atmosphere in our country. He said, "Christianity is scientifically unsupported and probably insupportable, philosophically suspect at best, disreputable at worst, and historically fraudulent." I've got a big problem with that statement. First of all, he says, "Christianity is scientifically unsupportable and insupportable." And I say to that, "Oh, really? I've read the Bible through a number of times. I've yet to find a single scientific error anywhere in the Bible." Why would somebody say that? I think they might say that because they haven't read the Bible. Or either that, or they read the Bible with such a biased perspective, just trying to find some sort of supposed error. And then McCown goes on and he says, "philosophically suspect." Now what we're going to do, and that's the focus of this talk, is we're going to compare three different philosophies. The philosophy of scientism or naturalism, which would be represented by Dallas McCown. The philosophy of postmodernism. And the philosophy of Christianity. What is the philosophy of Christianity? Well, that's also known as Christian theology. And I believe this statement that Christianity is somehow a suspect philosophy, it won't hold up very well. I think if we ask what makes for a good philosophy, what makes for a good worldview, and we compare Christian philosophy to any other philosophy, I believe Christian philosophy will prove itself by far be the best available philosophy that we have. And by the way, Dallas McCown says that Christianity is historically fraudulent. Now that's another topic. We could spend an hour on that topic. We could spend an hour on why Christianity is not scientifically unsupported. We could spend an hour on why this idea that Christianity is historically fraudulent is bogus. But instead, we're going to talk about this philosophical idea. Let me talk about the idea of a worldview. What is a worldview? Well, if you can look, you can see on the screen, there's two different definitions. The first one's one I made up. And my definition of a worldview is the perspective one uses to process and interpret information received about the world. In other words, we have information coming into our mind all the time. And the question is, what does our mind do with that information? How do we interpret that information? What does that information tell us? And that's our worldview. It's the presuppositions we hold. It's the glasses we look through when we're looking at the world. It's how we interpret what we see. Another definition is that by James W. Sire, one of my favorite authors on worldview. In fact, let me recommend a book by Sire. It's called The Universe Next Door. A nice, simple book, kind of introduces you to the idea of worldview, and it describes a number of worldviews, including the worldviews of several religions and that of Christianity. Anyway, James Sire defines a worldview as: "A worldview is a set of presuppositions, otherwise known as assumptions, which we hold about the basic makeup of our world." In other words, how does the world work? What are the basic things that explain how the world works? Now I want to ask the question, what makes for a good worldview? Because that's what we're going to do. We're going to compare different worldviews. And I've got three points that I think most of us could agree on pretty nicely, that definitely, if it's going to be a good worldview, it needs to fit these three categories. First, in order for a worldview to be good, it has to be true. It's pretty obvious. If we hold to a basic presupposition, a basic assumption about the universe, which is wrong, that's not good. There's no, there's nothing to be good to be said about being wrong. The bottom line is, something that's true is not good. A worldview that is false, that's not consistent with what we know, is not a good worldview. There's no virtue to holding to something that's wrong. What do I mean by true? By true, what I mean is consistent with reality. The predictions this worldview makes agrees with what our common human experience tells us is true. And we're going to see in this talk that postmodernism doesn't meet this standard of truth. And neither does scientism, neither does scientific materialism. There's a thing called the correspondence theory of truth. It goes something like this. If a belief is in clear contradiction with well-established facts about the world, then it is not true. And therefore, I believe that a good worldview should agree with what I call the correspondence theory of truth. In other words, it should be consistent with what we know. Postmodernism doesn't even accept the correspondence theory of truth. Postmodernism says that something is true, not because it's actually true, but because a lot of people believe it's true. Simply by believing it's true, it somehow makes it be true. Alright, now, let's consider another item, we could say, that makes for a good worldview. A good worldview should be one that successfully answers the important questions that humans ask. Now, that's one thing I don't like about naturalism. And naturalism is good for a lot of things. Naturalism, materialism, which has led to science, and science has solved a lot of the world problems. Through science, we've conquered diseases. We've learned to communicate over vast distances. We've created conveniences that give us more free time. We've helped solve some problems of poverty and things like that. Science has some good things to be said about it. But one thing for sure is science doesn't answer any of the questions people really care about. I mean, what's chalk made out of? All right, does that really get you going in the morning? We have a chemist back there, a chemistry major, and I'm sorry to tell you this, but the things you learn in chemistry, that just doesn't answer the question. Let me give you a list of questions that I think people do care about. This is just my own list. I bet if you came up with a list, it'd be similar to this. And even those who hold to this philosophy of scientism or naturalism probably would actually have the same list. It's just embarrassing to write it down. Okay, so what is the nature of God, if you will? I think that's something that actually people care about that. What am I? In other words, what is a human being? Am I just a primate, slightly advanced? Is being a human being something more than that? What happens when we die? I think I care about that more than to explain, the enzyme that makes the muscles work. All right? I'm kind of interested in the enzymes that make the muscle work, but I'm more interested in what happens when I die. Okay? Can you relate to that? Why is it possible for us to know anything? Postmodernism does not help answer that question at all. And scientific materialism, it can't, we'll see, it can't answer that question. How do we know what's right and wrong? I think even those who don't believe in right and wrong, supposedly, I think even those people believe in right and wrong, they just won't admit it. I mean, bottom line is, I want to know if I'm doing what's right. And if I'm doing something that's wrong, I don't want to do it. And how do I determine what's right and wrong? What's my purpose in life? Now, if my life has no purpose, then what the heck? Just take care of and get it over with. Don't take up space and natural resources. The typical naturalist response is, sure, there's nothing to life. It's just bogus. You're dead like Rover, dead all over, then you die. But too bad, tough. That's just the way it is. All right, I suppose if that was true, then I guess I'd have to live with it. But you know what? Something in me tells me that is definitely not the case. Because there is a purpose in life. And what's the nature of my relationship with God? A worldview that doesn't answer those questions is not a good worldview, in my opinion. And the two that we're considering tonight do not help to answer those questions. Alright, so let's talk about naturalism. See, I deal with this every day. This is kind of the stuff that I have to do. When people talk about evolution. Naturalism, otherwise known as scientism or scientific materialism, is the belief that the only reliable or valid instrument to decide what is true, or even the value of any proposition, is the scientific method. So the scientific method is the only way to decide what's true and what's not true. Okay? There's a lot of people who believe that. Anything else is just nonsense. If that's true, then there's no basis for ethics or morality. Morality is just, humans have morality just because of genes. It's, particular chemicals that are produced in your brain make you think that this is good and that's bad. In other words, they're not actually good or bad. It's just this construct that comes because of the way your brain is wired. Clearly, if it's true, there's no such thing as supernatural. So, how many of you have ever prayed? Just raise your hand if you've ever prayed. You don't have to raise your hand if you don't want to. Okay. And in that case, if these people are right, you are talking to the other cells in your brain. The one part in your brain was talking to the other cells in your brain, and that's about it. And you're really acting like a fool and an idiot. Okay? No God, no truth. Oh, except the truth that's from science. For example, I say it's true that murder is wrong. But if scientism is correct, if naturalism is true, that's not true at all. In fact, evolution says killing somebody else is actually possibly very good. Because then you're continuing your genes and your chromosomes. And if there's any purpose in life at all, according to science, it's to produce progeny. That's the only purpose, if even that works as a purpose. To me, if this is an improvement on Christian philosophy, give me a break. And these people confidently, and they laugh, you know, like I said, people laugh at Christianity, which was some, you know, philosophy for idiots, and people just don't know it better. If scientism is correct, then justice has no meaning. I'll go on. Just some statements of believers in scientism. I went to a debate last night. Christopher Hitchens, you've heard of him? It was interesting. But anyway, in the universe of blind physical forces and genetic replication, some people are going to get hurt. Other people are going to get lucky. You won't find any rhyme or reason. But this is a really fulfilling philosophy. Isn't this really, you know, really get you going? Remember the three things that make for a good philosophy? It fails. Completely fails on all three. All right. The universe we observe has precisely the properties we would expect if there's no design, no purpose, no evil, no good. This is the philosophy that is being pushed at the university as superior to the Christian philosophy. I think we need to confront that. I'm serious. Don't be intimidated. Understand how empty the philosophies are that are batted around in these classrooms. Nothing but blind, pitiless indifference. Now, if this was true, remember, one of the items that makes for a good worldview is that it needs to be true. But this is false, and I'm going to show you why it's false. DNA just is, and we dance to its music. Thomas Huxley, we're as much the product of blind forces as the falling of a stone to earth, the ebb and flow of the tides. We just happened. And man was made flesh by a singular series of beneficial accidents. Now, my response to Thomas Huxley is, what do you mean beneficial? Oh, beneficial. What's the word beneficial mean under naturalism? How is it good that people exist? What's good about people existing? Give me one reason that it's good that people exist if you accept this philosophy, this wonderful philosophy, which is sort of the accepted philosophy, supposedly, among scientists. All right, postmodernism. There you go, postmodernism. And I'm going to talk about that a bit. Truth, if such a thing exists, is the property of culture. There is no truth. Truth is created by the people that believe it. In other words, the more people believe something to be true, then the truer it is. All right. Now, let's try that. All right. We'll go to the edge of a cliff. And 80 people say it's okay to jump off the cliff. 20 people say it's not. All right. Let's prove that it's the better truth or something like that by 80 jumping off the cliff. Now, if this is true, if postmodernism is true, and really, truth is determined by those who hold to it. And there's really no single truth. There's no standard of truth. If that's true, then I say lying and stealing is good. In fact, those who don't lie and steal are bad people. They're not good people. And I say, you know, a culture that abuses women, a culture that that sexual abuse is part of the culture, I say that's a good culture. And if you accept postmodernism, you have to accept that. I don't know about that. All right, now, a little title here. A Ridiculously Brief History of Science. I want to kind of give you the background for where these ideas came from. This is such a short version. I mean, like, it's a ridiculous short version. So let's talk about kind of the history of thought in the Western world. I'm going back to the time of the scientific revolution. Roger Bacon represents this idea. Bacon was he wasn't bald. I guess they thought if they shaved their head, they had closer connection with God. I don't know how that worked. But anyway, he was arguably the first philosopher of science, and he said, to study nature, we need to use external experience aided by instruments made precise by mathematics. Now, why did Roger Bacon believe that we could understand nature using instruments and mathematics and all that? Well, basically, Roger Bacon applied Christian theology to reach a few conclusions.
He said, first of all, there exists a God, a single God, an unchanging God. So basically said, there exists an unchanging God who created the whole universe. Well, if that's true, if there's an unchanging God who created the whole universe, then the universe should be governed by laws that are the same everywhere that don't change. That's one of the fundamental assumptions of science. And then he reasoned that second thing is about you learn about God from the Bible is that God loves us and he wants to have a relationship with us. So he reasoned, not only should there be one set of laws that governs the whole universe, but those laws should be understandable by us. Because part of how God communicates to us is through the universe that he created. You just read that in the Bible in several different places. And then he reasoned, using Christian ideas, that the universe should be describable by mathematics. The universe should be beautiful. It should be ordered. All right, and like I said, he was the first one to say that in order to study nature, you need to use mathematics. And then he reasoned further that the universe should be designed so that we can observe it. In other words, there should be a one-to-one correspondence between how our brain works and how the universe works so we could understand it. And guess what? We just looked at the fundamental presuppositions of science. So where did science come from? Christian theology. And if you think about it, because the next slide is saying the same thing, this is how I teach it in my philosophy of science class. First day of class, I say, these are the fundamental assumptions of science. And then we say, and guess where it came from? It came from Christian theology. In fact, all the early scientists, all of them, not only believed in God, but they had a view of God different from our modern view. For example, Copernicus, arguably the first scientist, he believed that the planets went in circular orbits around the sun, but he believed that angels moved the planets. It's not quite the modern view, okay? So, anyway, the assumptions of science, first of all, they're accepted without proof. In other words, it's impossible to prove that it's true. It's impossible to prove that the universe is governed by laws that don't change anywhere. Because if that's true, then supernatural things don't happen, which that would kind of seem to rule out some parts of Christianity. They form the basis of all scientific thinking, and they're accepted on faith. Oh, yes. Science, the basic ideas of science, are accepted on faith because they cannot be proved. They are literally impossible to prove. All right, and then I'm skipping forward about 400 years. All right, now we're to Isaac Newton. That was fast. All right, and Isaac Newton discovered the law of gravity, but more importantly, came up with the idea of the mechanical universe. In other words, he created this philosophy that the universe works according to laws which kind of go on their own. So, in other words, the reason the planets go around the Earth is because of the law of gravity. And in fact, the universe is like a machine. If the universe is like a machine, then maybe God just wound it all up, and then he's just sort of off, doing something else, busy somewhere else, and it's kind of going on its own. And the fact is, the honest truth is, at first glance, the universe does seem to work that way. Now, I believe that God's finger is in all the time. In fact, the Bible says if Jesus kind of took off, the universe would fall apart instantaneously. That's in Colossians 1. I don't quite say that. That's pretty close to what it says. But this led to the idea, all right, well then maybe God's not sort of moving the planets around, so maybe God is sort of the primary mover, kind of created it all, but, not really involved in that so much. You kind of see where that led to. By the 1800s, or by the 1700s, people were asking, well, if the universe works like a machine, then why mention God at all? And now we're heading towards naturalism. The idea that the only truth is essentially nature. Voltaire, who taught religious skepticism, David Hume, the ultimate skeptic, and people began to ask, can we really know anything? Because science gives no certainty. Science never tells you whether something is true or not, ever. In science, everything is, well, I think so, I'm pretty sure, but we're really not sure. There's not a whole lot of solidity to that, right? Because basically in science, there is no truth. Wow. And then one of my favorite stories is this guy, Laplace. He wrote a treatise on Newton's works and advanced it, and the greatest work of mathematical physics at the time. And he gave a copy to Napoleon, and he had a little audience to Napoleon. He said, using physics, we could work all the way back in time, all the way forward in time, and explain everything that ever has and ever will happen. And Napoleon said, well, where is God in this? And he said, I don't need that I don't need that hypothesis. All right, so we're starting to get naturalism, which says that, you know, God, you can ignore God. By the end of the 20th century, the 19th century, science appeared to be triumphant. And, you know, and we had this whole idea, I don't know if you've ever heard of eugenics, where basically people thought, what we're going to do is we're going to improve humanity through science. So what we'll do is we'll sterilize all the, in quotes, retarded people. That's not a nice way to say it anymore. You know, or people who have criminals, or people who are... say the wrong race, for example, who obviously are inferior. This was coming where? From scientists. And scientists were at the leading edge of the eugenics movement. And really, that was what motivated what Hitler did in his medical experiments in World War II. So then, you know, because people thought, you know, we're getting better and better in humanism, and we're going to figure it all out, and you know, the human mind is sufficient for everything. And then World War I happened, and then World War II happened, and the Holocaust, and the Hiroshima, and people thought, wow, science isn't solving any of our problems. The only problems it solved is the ones we don't even care about. Which was true all along. And then we got postmodernism. You know what happens? That's, you know, the pendulum swings like this, you know. I'll talk about postmodernism later. But I want to talk about naturalism a bit. Here's why I say this is a very, very poor worldview. Remember, you're bombarded with this idea all the time. The Christian worldview, that's for losers and idiots and people who just need it as a crutch. I know you hear that. And I want you to leave tonight thinking that that is flat, not true. Not only is it not true, but these supposed smart philosophies that everybody's touting at the university, those are the ones that don't make any sense. They don't answer the questions we care about. They're not true. And, oh, I forgot point number three. Did you notice in the outline point number three, the most important point of all? Oh, I forgot that one. What makes for a good worldview? Oh, I forgot that one. Those who describe it to it are better for having taken this as their worldview. The worldview you take, it's a good one, I would say, obviously, if it makes you a better person. And if it doesn't make you a better person, then I say by definition, that's not a very good worldview. Anyway, getting back to... Alright, here we go. So, 4 points. Why I think this is a bogus philosophy and flat wrong. Number one, it's a religious belief. You know, they're trying to create the impression that it's kind of like, you know, people are really open-minded, surely would accept this philosophy. But I say it's a religious belief based on circular reasoning with no evidence to support it as a fundamental belief. Number two, it doesn't answer the questions that people care about. I already talked about that. Number three, it's false. And who would want to accept as their working philosophy something that's a lie? That, personally, I don't really find that very exciting. And number four, I believe it's dangerous. It's bad. Arguably evil. And so why would we want to support this kind of thinking? Scientific materialism. Only that which can be observed and measured through the technique of scientific method is real. Everything else is unreal. If you think it's real and it's not provable by science, you're deceived. That's thus the title of the book, The God Delusion by Dawkins. Here's another statement of materialism. Now listen to this carefully, because this is what you're going to be bombarded with probably in your science classes. Here we go. We exist as material beings in a material world, all of whose phenomena are the consequence of material relations among material entities. In a word, the public needs to accept materialism, which means they must put God in the trash can of history where such myths belong. Okay, if we accept that, I believe we're going to have a society and a culture that's going to go in absolutely the wrong direction. And you can see what's happened already to morality in our world. I'm disturbed about what's happened to the idea of morality. So, circular reasoning. See, this is based on unprovable assumptions. What are those assumptions? That the universe is ordered and unchanging. Okay, how do you know that? It's interesting. I was watching a forum. It was in the UK. I was watching it, and there's this really a chemist, a world famous chemist, and they were having this interactive forum. And they said, "How is it that you know that the only thing that's true is what can be proved from science?" He said, "Well, because science has done this." And they said, "How do you know that?" I mean, what's your evidence for this? He said, blah, blah, blah. And because this it was set up in the form of essentially almost like a trial sort of thing where they get cross-examined. And finally he said, well, because I believe it's true. And you realize that. Basically he said, the reason I believe it's true is because I believe it's true. If that's the foundation for a belief, that I believe it because I believe it, what's that called? That's called circular reasoning. Right? That's not a very solid foundation for belief in anything. It can't be proven. In fact, science itself is not scientific. You can't do an experiment to test the fundamental assumptions of science. Okay? Doesn't mean it's bad. Number two, it can't answer the questions people care about. Now, science answers some questions really good, like when is that going to happen? Okay? How long will this thing last? You know, what does that weigh? Science is great at things like that. Where? What? Where? How many? And by what means? Science is really good at answering questions like that. Alright? So, you know, if you want to build a, you know, go from here to there faster, you know, that does that really fulfill your soul to do that? Here are the questions that science can't answer. Why am I here? Is that the right thing to do? Can't help you. And don't give in to this idea that somehow naturalism is a philosophy you can live your life by. It is not. Does God exist? Will God answer if I pray? Do supernatural things happen? Science cannot even begin to answer any of those questions. Now, I believe it is patently false. It is just simply not true. Why? Because if scientific materialism is true, then I don't exist. I'm serious. Now, alright, I mean my body exists, but what I mean is I don't exist. Think about it. Say, I want to go to the store. If the naturalist is true, that's just sheer nonsense. What do you mean, I? What's I? Seriously, what are you? You're a primate with chemicals that sort of move around and neurons that fire. If you exist at all, you exist as a bunch of electrical impulses. I think humans have more dignity than that, to be honest with you. In fact, I believe we're made in God's image. But if materialist is right, then the consciousness, you know, we are conscious. We know that we exist. And we have ideas about the universe. But if the naturalist is right, you're fooling yourself to think that. All you are is chemicals. And chemicals and nerve cells and nerve impulses. And if the materialist is right, then there's no soul, no spirit, and no non-physical reality. You say, you know, I was about to say, I love you. I'm looking at Adam. I say to my wife, I love you. If the naturalist is right, that's just nonsense. That's just meaningless gobbledygook. I love you. I chemical you. I don't know which part of the brain love, you know, because there are certain kind of neurotransmitters. I serotonin you or something like that. This is a good philosophy. Belief in God is just, people believe in God because it's an accident of evolution. In fact, according to these people, a very, very unfortunate accident. It's just natural selection by unfortunately created this idea, because we all know that virtually everybody believes that there is more than just physical reality. Life has no value. Human beings have no value. You have no value if this is true. Great, wonderful. This is this philosophy, you know, and Christian philosophy is suspect, you know. Religious thought is nonsense. Art and literature and music have no value. You know, which is better, you as a kid playing on the piano and hitting weird notes, or a Beethoven symphony? Which is better? If naturalism is right, you know, which is more valuable, gold or dirt? There's, you know, this is a true philosophy. Human rights have no basis, by the way. If this is true, then human rights have no basis. None. On what basis can you say we hold these truths to be self-evident if you accept this philosophy? Unless you can do an experiment, which obviously you can't. It's false because the universe was created. the folks, the universe was created. How do I know that? Because science told us it was created. The Bible says it as well. In Genesis 1, Hebrews 11:3, it says, what was visible is created from what was invisible. Life was created. Now that's another talk. All right, you know, we got to give up this projector in about 10 minutes. Yeah, so I can't talk about that. Life was created, and besides, the universe is incredibly, amazingly fine-tuned. The design of the universe is so spectacularly amazing, and to argue it's not designed is ridiculous. I believe naturalism is also dangerous, because if it's true, then good and evil are meaningless ideas. Stealing is not wrong, and any kind of sexual behavior is as good as any other kind. What would be wrong with having sex with animals? What would be wrong with having sex with your daughter? I mean, seriously, why is that wrong? In fact, I learned in my evolution class that there's some reasons why that would actually be advantageous. And prove to me that I'm wrong. This is a good philosophy. And racism, oh yes. By the way, most people who hold to this philosophy, are not only they're not racist, most of them are pretty good folks. Alright, you understand what I'm saying? What I'm saying is there's no basis for morality if you accept this. I'm going to skip up. Well, think about this. There have been a few countries whose laws have been created based on materialism. Okay. I'll just list them. French Revolution. Now that was a great experiment there. Really positive stuff. Khmer Rouge, North Korea, Communist China, USSR. Those are the only ones I know of. Secular societies based on atheism. All right, that's what this philosophy has to offer. All right, postmodernism, the idea that nothing is true. Nothing is true. Reality is a social construction. It's true for you, but it's not true for me. So if you like to believe that, that's fine. It doesn't bother me. I won't bother you as long as you won't bother me. Meaning, if it exists, it lies in those who believe it. So if enough people believe something, then it's true. This is a good philosophy. If this is true, then there is no truth. And point number one that describes a good worldview is eliminated, okay? Now, the correspondence theory of truth says this. A statement is true if reality corresponds to that statement. Can you buy that? If reality agrees with what you just said. If I say I'm 27 feet tall, is that true?
No.
Now, if postmodernism is correct, I realize I'm kind of exaggerating, but if postmodernism is correct, that if everybody says that I'm 27 feet tall, then I'm 27 feet tall. And if everybody says that it's okay to hate people who are Muslims, then it's okay to hate people who are Muslims. That's postmodernism. Thank you very much. Or there's relativism. A claim that is made is true for those who accept it by the very act of accepting it. That's an advantage. That's a philosophy better than the philosophy of Christianity. If postmodernism is correct, then reality is just a social construction. It's true for you. Truth is found in an accepted narrative. And those who write books have no authority to determine what it means, except postmodernists, of course. They have the authority to interpret their books. Consciousness is social, not individual. So you think that you have an individual consciousness, an individual reality, an individual belief that you are important. If postmodernism is correct, that's not true. The only thing that's important is the culture, not the individual. All truth is relative. There is no truth. And if that's true, I believe it's self-refuting. If nothing is true, then guess what else isn't true? Postmodernism. And besides, some things are just true. You know, I don't accept scientism, but science has told us some things that are true. I mean, atoms exist, molecules exist, F equals MA. You can say it doesn't. Let's say everybody says from now on F does not equal MA. I say F equals MA. I'm sorry about that. I'm sorry about that. And that shirt is yellow. That shirt is purple. All right? And postmodernism says, well, you know, if everybody says it's purple, then it becomes purple. Alright, if your culture told you it's safe to jump off a cliff, would you jump off the cliff? So postmodernism does not agree with reality. I believe it's also dangerous. Now, which is a better culture? Nazism or Christianity? Postmodernism says, well, they're just different cultures. And if it's true, then sin is defined by those who say, if a culture says this is sin, then it's sin by definition. If a culture says it's not, then it's not by definition. All right? Would you like to live in a world like that? The answer is you're living in a world increasingly like that. Now I want to talk about something positive. I'm going to talk for only about 10 more minutes. I want to talk about the Christian worldview. The Christian worldview is this: the physical world is real, it's created, and it's good. There's a lot of people, believe it or not, Hindu philosophy, Buddhist philosophy, Eastern philosophy in general, denies that this world is real. Greek philosophy says the world is bad. But God, when He made the world, Genesis 1:31, He said it was good. It was very good. It's real. And to me, I like that philosophy because it's true. It was created. You know why I like that philosophy? Because it's true. And it's good. You know why I like that philosophy? Because it's true. Second thing in the Christian worldview, it says there exists a parallel unseen spiritual reality, which is not limited to or defined by the physical reality. Now, I can't prove that one. I can't do an experiment. I can't put some chemicals in a thing and prove that. But you know what? There's a lot of reasons why I believe that there is a soul. There is a spirit. I mean, the fact that Jesus was raised from the dead, that tells me something. The fact that the Bible predicted over 1,000 years beforehand that the Messiah would be crucified, that tells me there's a reality beyond physical reality. That tells me that even time and physical space are not ultimate limitations. So there is a reality beyond the physical. If the Christian worldview says the creator of the physical and the spiritual world is the God who's revealed in the Bible. It says human beings have both a physical and a spiritual nature. But the spiritual nature is more important than the physical nature. Why? Because it's eternal. The Christian worldview: although the world is good, evil exists. Why does evil exist? See, postmodernism can't explain the existence of evil because it says it doesn't exist. Naturalism can't explain evil because it says it doesn't exist. All right, and I say genocide is evil. I say sexual abuse is evil. I say lying is wrong. I say adultery is wrong. It's evil. I say dishonesty is wrong. I say stealing is wrong. So evil does exist. And why does evil exist according to the Bible? Because God loved us so much that He gave us a freedom to choose. And think about that. Everybody here understands love. Now, scientists theoretically don't understand love, but they actually do, of course. Obviously they do. And love gives a choice, doesn't it? Imagine parents who never let their children make any choices. You got a 47-year-old person, mom and dad, is it okay if I go to the bathroom and, you know, and stuff like that? Love gives, in fact, for somebody to love you, you can't force somebody to love you, can you?
No.
So to me, the fact that God is love and He made us in order to love Him, that's a truth that is absolutely inescapable. That's part of the Christian worldview. But the cause of evil is that God gave us a choice and we chose to rebel against Him. And how can you deny that? You guys are almost teenagers, all right? How can you deny that humans are essentially rebellious if you've been around teenagers? This is the wrong audience to mention that to. And there's a definite right and wrong for human behavior, which is determined by God. That's the Christian worldview. Christianity answers the questions of how did I get here, answers the question of why am I here, and answers the question where am I going. It tells me why human beings are able to comprehend the universe. It tells me why there's pain and suffering in the world. It answers every single question that anybody cares about. But that's not all, because Christianity is true. It answers the problem of sin. You know, does ignoring a problem make it go away? No, so people can pretend it doesn't exist. It says the problem of sin is solved by the Son of God. The problem of suffering. The problem of suffering, first of all, suffering in itself is not evil, but the solution to suffering is compassion. That is the Christian solution to suffering. What's the atheist solution to suffering? Suffering is probably good for you because, well, anyway, I'm not going to go into that. It solves the problem of death as well, doesn't it? The Christian view has given us science. The Christian worldview has given us, if it were not for Christianity, slavery would still dominate the whole earth. I'll tell you that right now. If it were not for Christianity, civil rights wouldn't exist. If it were not for Christianity, there'd be no women's rights. History tells us these are all facts. And I've been all over the world, and in every country, in Buddhist countries, guess who does most of the benevolent work? Christian groups. In Hindu countries, guess who does most of the benevolent work? Christian groups. I'd say in Muslim countries, it's the Muslim culture, the Muslim worldview does include good work. So I'll concede that, and that's good. But even in Muslim countries, even there, a large proportion of all the benevolent work is done by Christians. Why? Because the Christian worldview is a good worldview. It's a worldview that makes people better. It's true. So, what is truth? Jesus says, I am the truth. And I'm the way, the truth, and the life. What's the truth according to postmodernism? Nothing. Jesus is truth. How do I know Jesus is truth? Because he fulfilled the prophecy of the Messiah. Jesus said, I'm the bread of life. What did he do right before he said, I'm the bread of life? In front of thousands of people. He made bread out of nothing, right? Jesus says, I'm the resurrection and life. What did he do about 20 minutes later? He raised Lazarus from the dead. He said, destroy this temple and I'll raise it on the third day. What did he do? He raised from the dead on the third day. See, that's why I believe the Christian worldview is the right worldview. We're going to take some questions and answers here. On any subject, right?
Yeah.
Any subject.
Can I just say a couple things real quick, John?
Sure.
I think one of the coolest things is having a scientist who totally believes in God. Let's give it up for Dr. Harvey.
All right.
Yeah, I know in college, either you have already or you're going to be, if you're in college or going to college, you're often exposed to various worldviews and philosophies. Just all kinds of things, depending on the faith that you grew up in. Sometimes coming to college just totally spins kind of your views, spins them out of control. And you're exposed to a lot of things. You got PhDs telling you there is no doubt, all kinds of stuff like that. It's great to have them saying, here are reasons why. Here are reasons that we can be confident to believe in God and just the Christian worldview. So I think that's really cool. So what we wanted to do is kind of open it up to have a Q&A. So I know a lot of you are wondering, hey, where can I get a haircut like that guy Frank Bacon? No, really, I know some of us are wondering, even some simple stuff like what's up with dinosaurs? You know what I mean? We want to ask John some very hard-knocking questions, but I know there's just very, just sometimes what we might consider simple questions, but really stuff we want to know about that we're interested in.
That's right.
Right. So who wants to open it up?
I think I raised more questions than I answered. So
yeah, you gotta be brave here.
Going to the topic of suffering.
Yeah.
I think of the tsunami in 2005.
Right.
Hundreds of thousands of people were killed.
Right.
A God of mercy, a God of love, how does he allow that type of suffering to exist?
That's a good question. Now, in my opinion, most of the suffering in the world is caused because of sin. In other words, God gave us a choice, we rebelled, we sinned. But obviously not all suffering is caused by sin. In fact, when the tsunami happened, there were mullahs in Sumatra said the reason it happened is because people hadn't been going to the mosques sufficiently. And to me, I don't even think that the Quran is true, so I just don't think that explains it very well. Let me tell you why it happened. The reason it happened is because there's two plates on the earth, and they slipped like that. Now, God created the earth, and he created this thing called plate tectonics.
That's right.
And I say plate tectonics is a good thing. Let me tell you why plate tectonics is a good thing. If we didn't have plate tectonics, what plate tectonics does is it recycles the crust of the earth. If it were not for plate tectonics, then the surface of the earth would have become sterile hundreds of millions of years ago. Maybe there'd be bacteria, and that'd be about it. Okay, so that's one good thing about plate tectonics. Another good thing about plate tectonics is that's what creates our atmosphere. In other words, without plate tectonics, our atmosphere, the atmosphere of the Earth, would be virtually non-existent. So I say plate tectonics is a good thing. Now, in fact, those who would complain about plate tectonics, I'd like to hear a better plan. So if you got a better set of physical laws that you can come up with to create a universe that actually works and goes on its own, and the planets move around, and the energy comes in there for free, it's really cool, and all this sort of stuff. If you can do one that doesn't have plate tectonics, then I'd like to hear your plan for that. I'm sort of kidding in a way, but in a way I'm not kidding. And if you want to go to a planet without plate tectonics, go to Mars. That just doesn't work very well. So, to me, the universe is incredibly, spectacularly, fantastically, wisely made, but it is a dangerous place. You know, God, why did God? What about hurricanes? You know, what about that? What's up with God? Is he stupid? He can't figure that out? No, I say weather is a brilliant and amazing creation. In fact, if it weren't for weather. By the way, God had the earth tilted, which was also a really cool thing because it kind of that's also really good. If it were not for weather, then most of the earth would be uninhabitable. That wouldn't be so good. But in creating this incredible thing called weather, sometimes the weather gets a little rough, okay? And by the way, those who assume that the tsunami is evil are making an assumption that I will accept, which is that death is evil. Death is evil if you're maybe a scientific materialist. But I'm going to take your question in a second, by the way. You're next in line, no matter what, okay? But, you know, according to the Christian worldview, which not only is a nice one, and I'm glad it's true, but it happens to be true. According to that, death is a transition to something that hopefully would be better. So, that's my answer to that question. Okay, next question.
I was just going to ask, what is up with dinosaurs?
Oh, what's up with dinosaurs?
Everybody's wondering that, just so you know.
Well, the dinosaurs kind of came into existence around 240 million years ago, right after the mass extinction of that 250 million years ago. They were killed out around 63, 64 million years ago. Probably, at least partially, because of a huge asteroid that hit the Earth about then. Okay. Now,
and John, how come the Bible doesn't talk about dinosaurs?
All right. Let's just imagine that you're a Jew living, 3,500 years ago, and God, I'm going to change the version of Genesis 1. Okay. All right. So, on the first day, God caused the Big Bang to happen, which was this massive production of protons and neutrons and all this sort of stuff. I mean, imagine you're a Jew 3,500 years ago, and then gravity collapsed that matter back down again and formed the planets and stars, Now dinosaur. Yeah. God said, let me tell you about dinosaurs, and let me tell you about bacteria. By the way, because bacteria. First I made bacteria. They're so small you can't see it except with a microscope. Oops, forgot there's no such thing as a microscope. Alright, so, I mean, Genesis chapter 1 is an accurate description of what happened. Basically, here's Genesis 1:1. Light, Big Bang, flash of light. Earth exists, because Genesis 1 is written from the perspective of the surface of the earth. So the earth exists, it's covered with water. There's night and day, but the atmosphere is so thick. Here's a trick question. Okay, trick question. If you were on Mars, how often would you see the sun? Trick question.
All the time.
If you're on Venus, did I say Mars?
Yeah, you said Mars.
If you're on Venus, Venus, how often would you see the sun? The answer is never. You'd have night and day, but no sun, moon, or stars. If you were on Venus, you would have no idea that sun, moon, and stars even existed. It's like, it's light, okay? Well, now it's dark. That'd be the whole thing. So there was light and darkness, and then land separated from the water. Then life appeared on the water, and then that life kind of changed the chemistry of the entire Earth itself, changed the atmosphere from reducing to oxidizing. That's another story. And then the atmosphere cleared. The sun, moon, and stars appeared in the heavens. Then life appeared on the land. First simple life, then more advanced life, then human beings. That's Genesis 1:1. That sounds pretty good to me. Now, the question is, well, what about the 6 24-hour periods? Because clearly, the whole question of dinosaurs is coming from that, I'm assuming anyway, right?
No, I know that they existed like way before Jesus and the Earth, like the creation.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, like I said, probably around 64 million years ago, they ceased to exist. My experience is when people ask that question, they're saying, well, since the earth is only about 8,000 years old, then what's up with dinosaurs, basically? Yeah, especially East County, San Diego, there's a lot of people who have that question. I get a lot of students who ask that question. And by the way, I'm not putting down East County, San Diego, okay? I guess I just did, didn't I?
Yeah, you did, yeah.
All right. So I just have to apologize to Adam, who's from East County. All right, good. But anyway, so the question is, are those days metaphorical or are they literal? But going back to the dinosaurs, I mean, if God had described all these things in detail, which wasn't the point of it anyway, it would have been very, very confusing. So he just gave a very, very simple outline, which is accurate. So the question is, are those days literal 24-hour periods? The answer is, well, hard to say just from reading the Bible. I suppose we could maybe look at science and let that tell us. Now, how about this? I'm guessing that most of the people in this room believe in an all-powerful, all-knowing, all-everything type God, right? Could that God create the earth? Boom, it appears old at the instant it's created.
Yeah.
Of course, Jesus said, you know, I can make children of Abraham out of these stones. And I believe it. And when Jesus made that wine, how old did the wine appear to be? I don't know, a few months or whatever. He made the fish. How old was the fish? It was 0.1 seconds old, right? But it looked at least 6 years old. So God could have made the earth appearing old. Could have done that. See what I'm saying? But if that's true, then that's kind of weird. What that would mean is that I guess dinosaurs never existed, so God put their fossils in the ground. That just doesn't seem right. But I'm serious. I really don't know what God did. I mean, God could do whatever he wanted to do, and I'm not here to tell him what to do or how to do it, or what I'm saying. But if the earth is just a few thousand years old, then let's imagine you're looking through a telescope at a galaxy a billion light years away. Okay? You got that? You're looking through a telescope at a galaxy a billion light years away. Okay? How long ago did the light leave that galaxy? A billion years ago. So how old is that galaxy at least then, obviously? A billion years old. So science tells us the universe is quite old, and I don't believe the Bible contradicts that at all. So there's this certain group of people that interpret it in a certain way that I don't agree with that. The Hebrew word yom is translated. I've got a book over here, Is There a God, that goes into a lot of detail on that. Too long an answer, so let's go for another question. Hurley.
Okay. So, you do a good job, putting, the holes through science, so, we're not really sure, they can't have the absolute answers, and they don't have the answer to everything.
Right.
It's basically, the gist of it. But just because science doesn't have the answer to everything, then we have to go to God is the answer to everything. I mean,